Hello, and welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mitchell, he's Slim.
Hi!
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes, or Elon Musk will buy Letterboxd, and next week Joe Rogan will be hosting Weekend Watchlist.
We don't want that, okay? So we're going to get it under 30 minutes.
We're all in this together.
We are, and you'll be pleased to know that Doctor Strange is in our rear view, and directly ahead of us is the adult film industry. Our prayers have finally been answered. This week, we'll be covering Pleasure, On the Count of Three, The Innocents, and we'll look back at our own community reviews from the past week, and of course, our own watch lists.
Yes, I have thoughts on Passenger 57, and I know, Slim, you have indeed. It's true. The rumors are true. You have finally watched The Sacrifice. So we'll get into those later. But to start off with, let's talk about our first new film for this week. The film is Pleasure, directed by Ninja Thyberg. It's being released in theaters by Neon. The film is on 37,000 watch lists on Letterboxd. The synopsis: 20-year-old Bella Cherry leaves her small town in Sweden for Los Angeles with the aim to become the world's next big porn star. But the road to her goal turns out to be bumpier than she imagined. This film premiered at Sundance 2021. It's been a little bit of a long wait. Started off at A24 and then ended up at Neon now, which I honestly personally think is a better home for it. And now people are going to be getting the chance to check it out. We have both been able to see it. I saw it at Sundance. Slim, I know you've seen it more recently. What are your thoughts on Pleasure?
I watched it at home. Very fortunate to get a screener. And then as soon as I fired that screener off my TV, I quickly moved it to my laptop because my son was not yet asleep, because there are some dicey scenes in this. I mean, it's about the adult film industry.
Like, you probably should have thought that through before you started watching.
James, you know what? You might actually have to leave the room before I watch this movie about the porn industry, FYI. I enjoyed it. It's very, how do I put this? It's very explicit. Yeah. More so than I was anticipating from like a pseudo mainstream movie about the adult film industry. I did enjoy it. Sophia Capel was very good as the lead. So this is I didn't see the short film this was based on, but I really enjoyed the direction of this movie. And I thought it was pretty realistic for, you know, the kind of care that goes into these movies.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's an interesting take on the adult film industry, because you're right, like most of what we see in films that tackle that side of the industry, even something more recent like X, it is doing it in this kind of like mainstream Hollywood-y kind of way. And Pleasure, it feels like the aim of it more than anything is to kind of like demystify the adult film industry and just get in there and kind of show the day-to-day mechanics of it. And we really get to see, I mean, both in positive and I think negative ways too, we see how it's an industry and a workspace so much similar to other ones too, where you can have good and bad experiences based on who you're working with and, you know, what kind of the environment is. I think there's one scene in particular that's my favorite scene in Pleasure, which is this BDSM shoot, which you would think in other movies portraying that would be portrayed in a really like salacious kind of way. It's obviously dealing with like specific kink and everything. But in Pleasure, that's the scene that feels the most grounded out of anything. It's the one where we really see on the shoot with a female director as well on that specific shoot in the film. There is this like nurturing, this care that's given to everybody on the set, including and especially Bella Cherry, to make sure like all the actors are super comfortable and everybody is just really taken care of. And it's that kind of scene where, yeah, in other movies, it would be portrayed in this really like exploitative kind of, you know, salacious way. But in Pleasure, it is just really thought out. And I think that that's something that you see throughout the film is, yeah, taking that more clinical, more, realistic, authentic look at the industry.
I was trying to think of the last movie that I'd seen about the porn industry, and the first movie that came to mind was Orgasmo. Remember that movie from the Jesus, Dudes Who Made South Park?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been a long time since I've seen a movie like that.
Yeah, I think that is a perfect counterpoint to what Pleasure is doing and where we're at now and what people, I think, are really looking for from a film like this compared to what they were looking for. What that probably came out like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Next film on our list, On the Count of Three, Gerard Carmichael, written by Ari Kecher and Ryan Welch, in theaters and on demand, I believe. 34,000 watch lists. Val has reached a new place where he feels the only way out is to end things, but he considers himself a bit of a failure. His effectiveness lacking, so he figures he could use some help. As luck would have it, Val's best friend Kevin is recovering from a failed suicide attempt, so he seems like the perfect partner for executing this double suicide plan. And we've both seen this, but I know you have seen this previously at Sundance. What was your vibes?
Yeah. Again, you know, kind of an interesting coincidence that, like Pleasure, this is a film that came out. It premiered at Sundance 2021, and it's just coming out for general release now. I mean, both of these films have, you know, provocative subject matter. And so maybe that, you know, contributed partly to why they're taking a little bit longer to get released. They want to make sure that they're releasing them with as much care as possible. And I mean, this On the Count of Three was my favorite film that I saw at Sundance last year. I absolutely love it. I'm a huge fan of Christopher Abbott, who plays the best friend Kevin in this. I've been a huge fan of his for a long time now. His performances in films like Possessor and James White, I really love. But Gerard Carmichael, I'm, you know, a little bit newer to Gerard's work. I had seen some of The Carmichael Show, but it really wasn't until Rothaniel, which his new stand-up special, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, where I really started appreciating exactly like what he's bringing to the table. And I think Rothaniel, along with On the Count of Three, shows his desire to talk about these things that aren't often being talked about. And they're really difficult subject matter that he gets into. I mean, On the Count of Three, dealing with suicidal ideation, like, you're really playing with tricky territory there. And I think that in other films, they could go away where the film is either just really solemn, really grim the whole time, because obviously it's a really bleak kind of idea to be dealing with. But then you could go the other way, which we've seen in other films too, where...
Orgasmo.
Yeah. Orgasmo. But yeah, like, films like, I mean, I think of something like Elizabethtown, which I know, you know, some, there are people who are Elizabethtown defenders.
The king,
Cameron Crowe. Elizabethtown treats suicide in maybe a way that's a little bit more glib, a little bit more twee, and I think took some deserved flack for that. Orlando Bloom with his suicide bike, if anybody has seen that movie, it's a little tough to watch at times. But On the Count of Three, I think, is really smart in the way that Gerard and the writers Ari and Ryan approach the subject matter, where it is, they're taking it seriously. You know, there's a lot of respect given to what that struggle with mental health is, but it's also not relentlessly grim. Like something like Rothaniel, Gerard is taking this, he takes a really like engaging, really accessible approach into this material so that we find ourselves really compelled by what we're watching and really entertained by what we're watching. On the Count of Three is so funny as well, but it also uses that as an avenue to get us to think about these, you know, complex subject matters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what I responded to the most in it. But what, I mean, you saw it more recently.
Maybe by the time this episode will post, I'll finally add my review, but I really enjoyed this. This is probably 4 stars for me. And
yeah, same for me.
We'll spotlight Clara Curtis's review. Gerard Carmichael is arguably one of the best stand-up comedians in the industry right now, and his featured debut has all of the best parts of his type of humor and introspection infused with it. His chemistry on screen with Christopher Abbott is absolutely electric. So make sure you make time to check out On the Count of Three as it releases this weekend.
Yeah, big, big recommendation for that one. Also coming out this week in theaters and on demand is The Innocents, written and directed by Eskil Vogta. It's on 25,000 watch lists. The synopsis: 4 children become friends during the summer holidays, and out of sight of the adults, they discover they have hidden powers. While exploring their newfound abilities in the nearby forests and playgrounds, their innocent play takes a dark turn and strange things begin to happen. I am excited to see this one. I haven't gotten the chance to watch it yet, but I'm a big fan of Eskil Vogta, who people may know as Joachim Trier's co-writer. He just received his first Oscar nomination this year for co-writing The Worst Person in the World. I also like his Eskil's directorial debut, Blind, which came out in 2014. That was his first film as a director. And The Innocents is actually only his second feature as a director. So it's taken him 8 years to get, you know, I mean, you're busy writing movies like Worst Person in the World, getting Oscar nominations. It takes you a little bit to get another project off the ground on your own. But so I'm excited to see, you know, this sophomore feature for him as a director. But I know that you've seen this film. So what did you think of The Innocents?
I have seen it. I watched this week. I gave it 3.5 stars in my review, which should maybe give people a pulse on the film. I wrote, Norwegian New Mutants meets Hereditary, which should give you some kind of indication as to what you might be in for. I really enjoyed it. I love Hereditary. Hereditary gave me like extreme anxiousness while watching it. I don't think I blinked for 2 hours. So imagine, you know, similar vibes, but with a cast of young child actors. So make of that what you will, what you might be prepared to see. Extremely dark, but it takes place in broad daylight. It's like a daylight, almost horror movie, really, which
love a daylight
are few
horror
and far
movie.
Between. Yeah, yeah. Might be added to some popular lists on Letterboxd.
Yeah, true.
Funnily enough, if you want to watch one of my fave horror movies, you can check out The Innocents from 1961 by Jack Clayton. Really love that one. So I'm anxious for, you know, maybe people that love The Worst Person in the World that maybe want to dip their toe into a darker subject matter to check out The Innocents. So I'm anxious to see the Letterboxd community at large check this one out.
Yeah, I know Mia is sadly not with us this week. Mia will be back next week, but she did want to make sure that we shouted out Cat Lovers. Beware watching The Innocents. Yes. Mia has seen the film. Mia adores cats, and it caused maybe some trauma for Mia. We'll see. She can maybe speak to that a little bit more next week. But for anybody watching it this weekend, just be a little content warning for you there with the cats.
Cats meets Hereditary.
Yeah, I think that's on the poster, right? Cats meets Hereditary.
there's a line directly underneath. Be warned, cat lovers. So that's on video on demand and theater. So check that out. Just real quick too, there was another release hitting Peacock streaming this weekend. And it's the Firestarter reboot. So if maybe you're looking to sit back at home and you're a Peacock subscriber, what a sentence that is. It's on 5,000 watch lists. So keep that in mind as you plot your weekend.
The Zac Efron stands hitting up that Peacock this week.
They're all there. They're waiting. So let's look back at last week. We'll spotlight maybe some community reviews, what we watched, and some ratings from the releases the previous week. But right off the bat, I do have to put myself on a pedestal. I went into a Philadelphia screening of Alex Garland's new movie, Men, last night. I saw it. Just a precursor. Annihilation is in my top four right now. Okay?
Big talk there. Big hype going in for Men for you. How did that pan out?
Didn't pan out so well for me. So I think as of this release, you know, the embargoes are out and about, and Mia, I'm going to call this out in my review, but Mia saw this the week before and she called out that there are some heavy mother vibes, you know, mother right. exclamation point that had come out. That was like, you know,
mother.
Yes. That's how you have to say it. Hugely metaphorical themes in that movie. And Garland is definitely going in that direction with this release. So your mileage may vary depending on what you thought of Mother that had come out a couple years ago. You might have similar thoughts with this. I liked Mother. I was able to vibe with the biblical themes, but for this one, it was almost like a little too obtuse for me. Mm-hmm. It looked great though.
There you go.
Looked great. So I know you don't have strong love for Mother. So I'm not sure how soon you'll be checking out Men from Alex Garland.
I am very much not a fan of Mother, but I do like Alex Garland a lot. So I'm going to be going in with kind of cautious optimism. Yes. I'm still going to try and, you know, go in with some optimism because I am a Garland fan. I love Ex Machina. I love Devs, his miniseries that he did that's on Hulu. I mean, that's a great show. But yeah, so yeah, seeing some mixed reactions to Men, which, you know, day-to-day life as well, very, very mixed reactions to Men. Mm-hmm. I got to finally see The Lost City this week, the Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum blockbuster.
Back.
Very excited to see this movie. Huge Sandy B fan here. The film is out now on digital platforms. It's also streaming on Paramount Plus. Get that with your Peacock. And honestly, the Lost City is so much fun. I honestly, we've mentioned before that because of my health stuff, I'm not going to theaters right now. So I'm not getting into those men's screenings. And in general, you know, I don't mind so much not being able to see a Doctor Strange in the theater or like, you know, those kind of films. I don't mind waiting to see those when they come out on digital or whatever. But this one, watching The Lost City, I really wish that I had been able to see it in theaters, especially with my mom. I feel like my mom and I would have had like such a blast watching this together. It feels like such a big screen movie. Not to say that I didn't still really enjoy it. I just really enjoyed it and know that I would have enjoyed it more on the big screen too. Like, it's really great just to see movie stars like Bullock and Tatum, and I mean Brad Pitt, Daniel Radcliffe too, just getting to do movie star things in this like fun romp that's not taking itself too seriously, not trying to tie in any other IP or tease a dozen sequels and TV shows, Doctor Strange. I didn't think that Bullock and Tatum had the best like romantic chemistry in the world, but even without that, there's still just such a blast to watch in something like this. They both have such like unbelievable comedic timing. And yeah, it really is. I mean, it just flew by like the most fun. I don't know. It's like 2 hours long. And oh my God. It's such a blast. I really had a good time with it. So I would strongly, if people didn't catch it in theaters, it's out there now. And I would really strongly recommend people checking out The Lost City.
That could be a great weekend date movie at home. You know, fire up. Everyone's got a Paramount Plus sub.
Everybody's got Paramount Plus. We're all watching it. Survivor. I use Paramount Plus for Survivor.
There you go. Big time Survivor vibes in the Letterboxd crew Discord. I know that much. I'm surprised there isn't a Survivor channel that's floating around.
There might be. You might just not be in it.
This is how I find out on Weekend Watch List. So let me spotlight some reviews from the previous week. Jeremy's Happening review, which we talked about last week with me, a very timely film. While it's set 60 years ago in France, in light of the current events here in the U.S., this feels as contemporary as ever. Duan holds nothing back in showing the tribulations and horror that Anne must go through to keep her life on track when faced with an unwanted pregnancy.
Yeah, Happening is a really great movie, and I also would strongly encourage anybody to check that out who hasn't seen it yet. Some a little bit more mixed reactions on Letterboxd to Doctor Strange 2. We've got some good and bad reviews coming in here. Andy reviewed the film on Letterboxd and said, "Nothing, nowhere, all at once. Outside of a few key scenes and a few, oh, that's so Sam Raimi moments, I was just profoundly bored by the general plot and absolutely all of the CGI.
If I didn't know Andy Stone, I would think that's like a Mitchell Berner Letterboxd account that was writing that review.
There might be some ones out there. We don't know.
Rowan's Doctor Strange 2 review. "I normally do not watch horror movies, and this Sam Raimi movie had quite a lot of jump scares for a wimp like me. I was happy to have a boyfriend at the cinema whose arms I could grab every time I was scared. Apart from that, really liked the movie."
There you go. We'll drop one more Doctor Strange 2 review here from Kingston, who says, "I watched this in IMAX on preview day, and someone in the front row loudly asked as the movie was beginning, 'Is this Thor?' Which was followed by the longest booing session I've ever witnessed. So jokesters out there at Doctor Strange screenings, watch out."
I love spending $20 just to troll the Doctor Strange audience in theaters.
Marvel fans, unforgiving.
Anything else you want to spotlight the previous week?
Yeah, I did want to mention, you know, Joe Dante, friend of Letterboxd, friend of the show, been on the Letterboxd show with you and Gemma. Somehow, Sam, my partner, and I had never seen Gremlins. So the other day, we popped it on Saturday morning in May, a rainy day, you know, perfect time for this Christmas comedy horror. And thinking, you know, Gremlins, all this time, all these years, I thought Gremlins was this, you know, I mean, I knew, you know, don't feed him after midnight. I figured, you know, there would be this cuddly little creature would be getting a little bit cranky, having some shenanigans going on. But I thought it was like a very family friendly kind of movie. That was always my interpretation of what Gremlins was. This movie is messed up. It is. I mean, some of the stuff that goes on in this movie is really, really twisted. That scene with the mom just like massacring these little cretins in the kitchen. It, I mean, that's out of control to me. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's a fun movie, but yeah, it, Gremlins a lot darker than I was expecting it to be.
We talked with Joe Dante on a previous Letterboxd show, and I had noticed this with when I rewatched Jaws, and then when I watched Gremlins ahead of our chat about their four faves, I brought up like, what is it about these movies of this era that can somehow be all ages, horror, comedy, drama? Yeah. And I think he pointed out that it was Amblin. It was like all Amblin films, and somehow they were able to do that. Like, those movies don't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, speaking of Dante too, The Burbs is one of my favorite movies, and it, I mean, The Burbs is like, it's a pretty dark movie that gets into some, you know, disturbing scenes, but it also just has this overall kind of tone of like, anybody can watch this. You can show your kids The Burbs. It's Tom Hanks, you know, fooling around in the suburbs. Why not?
Come back, Amblin. We need you now more than ever. Just quick rating spotlights. Doctor Strange 2, 3.5 on Letterboxd. Happening, 3.8. The Twin, which we spotlit. I don't even know if that's a word. That we spotlighted last week. 2.4 average. That's streaming on Shudder right now if you want to check that out.
A little tough on the Twin. Jack, we've got some facts from Jack this week, updating the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022, as he always does. So before we take a look at our own watch list, let's check out that Top 50. I know the big new entry for this week is Leonore Will Never Die, another Sundance film, a Filipino comedy action fantasy film that won the Special Jury Award for Innovative Spirit at the Sundance Prize. And you want to shout out any takes from Leonore Will Never Die?
Even though she tried to troll the show last week with her Downton Abbey reviews, I'll spotlight Gemma's review. If a single Sundance 2022 film encapsulated why we keep waking up and going straight to our nearest screen for more, it's this one. And the synopsis is fiction and reality blur with Leonore, a retired filmmaker, falls into a coma after a television lands on her head, compelling her to become the action hero of her unfinished screenplay. That sounds dynamite.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a blast. And Jack did note that the film has been picked up by Music Box Films for release in the US. Release date's still pending. So, I mean, we'll definitely shout that out again when it is going to be released for more people in the US to be able to see it. But yeah, I mean, Leonore Will Never Die, definitely one to keep an eye out. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness didn't quite crack the top 50, unfortunately, for it. But, you know...
Maybe next week, Doctor Strange. Final segment of the show. We're rapidly running out of time. We might have to allow the Elon takeover if we don't get under 30 minutes. But this is where we spotlight our own watch list. We shuffle our watch list each week and we watch a random streaming movie that's in our watch list and spotlight some reviews of listeners that do the same thing. So I finally watched The Sacrifice.
There we go.
It finally happened.
We did it.
Tarkovsky, the god. I think people call him the god. It looked fantastic. Some of the best cinematography I've ever seen out of any era.
Sven Nykvist.
My god. Out of control cinematography. So this follows a small group of a family and friends in a nice house with a view, finding out that World War III has started and it's likely that a nuclear holocaust is about to happen. So enjoy the rest of your day. And Alexander is, you know, a writer, philosopher, coming to grips with that. So about 3 hours long, coming to grips with his life, regrets, and, you know, the various characters telling stories in that time and how far Alexander would go to potentially stop what's about to happen if he could. I liked Solaris a lot. Mm-hmm. So I have the capability in my heart to like a Tarkovsky philosophical movie, but for some reason, this one just didn't stick with me as much. But I know this is a very popular film in our community.
Big Tarkovsky fan here. I went a little bit of a different direction with my film this year, with Passenger 57, starring Wesley Snipes. The film, directed by Kevin Hooks, is about an infamous terrorist who has evaded capture for a long time by being extremely clever and ruthless. Things get interesting when he hijacks a plane carrying famous security expert John Cutter, who isn't about to stand for this sort of thing. And I think that synopsis pretty accurately sums up the vibe that you're getting from this movie. It is... released in 1992, it is exactly the kind of action movie that I think you and I love from the 90s. It's just full of quips, Wesley Snipes doing his thing, this outrageous villain played by Bruce Payne, who's not really an actor that I was super familiar with. I looked at his Letterboxd. I've seen him in a few other things like The Keep, the Michael Mann movie, but I wasn't super familiar with him, but he really goes for broke in this in a way that I feel like movie villains don't often do anymore. It reminded me of the performance of Ron Silver in the Catherine Bigelow movie Blue Steel, if anybody's seen that. His performance in that is just like absolutely demented. And I mean, Payne's doing, he's going for broke the same way here. It's a pretty wild ride. So, I mean, I would definitely check out Passenger 57 if people are into that sort of thing. It's streaming on Showtime. I happen to have the Blu-ray of it, so I watch it that way. But
oh my God, you just have the Blu-ray laying around.
I have Blu-rays. I have so many of them.
I definitely want to add this to my watch list. This does sound like right up my alley, especially since I went through the Seagal filmography earlier this year.
Yeah.
I went through the muck, so this is right up my alley.
Yeah, you for sure would be a huge fan of this. Let's spotlight some of the reviews from people who have been shuffling their watch lists along with us, tagging their reviews weekend watch list. I want to give a shout out to my pal Ross Bratton, his Blood for Dracula review, where Ross says, "The opening credits scene depicting Udo Kier putting on makeup and getting himself ready while a haunting theme by Claudio Gizzi plays sets the entire vibe for the film. It may not be a great film, but it's definitely a mood film that ends in one hell of a bloody finale."
Mood film. That sounds like a potential Letterboxd list if it doesn't already
exist
currently.
Mood films on Letterboxd. Get to it.
Liam left a review for Sorry We Missed You. Loved it from the minute it started to the minute it ended. So damn emotionally devastating, but so damn good. Something that everyone should watch if they need a good cry. Add that to your list.
And one more from Georgie. Georgie's review of Mirai. "I honestly thought Mirai would be a wholesome family-friendly film, but the themes are serious and occasionally unsettling. So it seems directed towards adults who have trouble empathizing with young children. There are some genuinely beautiful and moving moments here, but the movie doesn't fully come together the way I want it to. Breathtaking animation, though." So you got that going for you, Mirai.
Okay. All right, let's head to our watch list. If you're listening, you can do the same thing. Head to your watch list on Letterboxd. Filter service by streaming, unless you want to, you know, go out and buy a DVD or rent it. And then sort by shuffle. So let's see. I got my fingers crossed for a nice, you know, 80s action movie, 90 minutes. Let's see. Oh my God. Are you ready for this?
Let's hear it.
Blood Fist 6, Ground Zero.
That sounds about right.
Rick Jacobson, terrorists take over a nuclear weapons launch site, but don't count on the humble military courier who happens to be making a visit. Is streaming on Tubi, so I'm back, baby.
Yeah, that is the slim vibe if I've ever heard it. All right, for me, I've got one that I've been looking forward to watching for quite a while, so pretty stoked to get to see Presumed Innocent, the 1990 Alan J. Pakula film starring Harrison Ford. The synopsis: Rusty Savage is a deputy prosecutor engaged in an obsessive affair with a coworker who is murdered. Soon after, he's accused of the crime. Harrison Ford always getting accused. And his fight to clear his name becomes a whirlpool of lies and hidden passions. I know I've got some friends who are very big fans of Presumed Innocent. I'm definitely excited to see this one. It's streaming on HBO Max. I think I might have a Blu-ray or a DVD around here somewhere. But if not, I can definitely watch it on HBO Max.
Rusty Savage, and his first name is Rosat.
Rusty, you know, everybody's favorite nickname for Rosat, as we all know.
Thank you so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mitchell, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And you can also check out our Weekend Watchlist list, updated weekly for all the movies we talked about this week in the episode notes.
Yeah, please follow Slim and me on Letterboxd. I think we're both only about 96,000 followers behind Mia. So, you know, we're getting there. We're getting really close. Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And thanks to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.